ladies and gentlemen.
You are now tuned in to Mastering Mitzvahs.
Mastering Mitzvahs.
A podcast focused on creating the perfect bar and bat mitzvah celebration, offering tips, tricks, and trends to ensure an amazing event. Mastering Mitzvahs. From New Jersey's own Explosive Entertainment.
Explosive Entertainment.
I know you're gonna dig this.
And here they are, your hosts, Dylan Weissman and Mike Langzer.
Good morning. Happy Monday, Dylan.
It's not morning.
But we planned on recording this in the morning. It's now 2:25 in the afternoon. But a Monday after a busy weekend, I feel like it's just recovery. Anyway.
This is the morning.
Is it a recovery day for you?
It's supposed to be, but here we are recording a podcast.
Okay. Can you duck down for a second? I want the viewers to see that your hair is up because it can't be tied back anymore.
It can't be tied back anymore. This is what I'm working with now, guys, and it's all Mike's fault. I've been getting a lot of mixed reviews on it. We have industry friends who are like, how dare you cut that? It was so great. Like, I have a bald friend who's like, you insulted my religion. Like, look, for what it's worth, it was a win-win for me because either, Mike, you would crush your first months of sales, which you did, and that's the benefit for the whole company, or you didn't, and then I get to keep the tied back ponytail bun situation, which is not fun for the office because they didn't like it.
I think change is good for what it's worth. And
I still haven't figured out how to like style it yet. If anyone has any suggestions, you'll let me know. But like right now, it's just like kind of like a cockatiel type of situation.
That's exactly what it looks like. It looks like one of the ducks that's in your kitchen sink or backyard or whatever you got going on there.
Ducks can live with chickens.
Why would I know this?
I didn't know that until they came home with me.
Okay. I think that's a topic for a whole other podcast. If anybody's interested in Dylan's ducks, message him directly. But let's talk here about timelines. We had a very busy mitzvah weekend this weekend. There were a lot going on. You and I got to work together on Sunday. We worked separately on Saturday. Our teams were all over the place. And I think timelines are such an interesting conversation because we spend so much time building them, tweaking them, reviewing them. There's like 8 billion iterations to the timeline. You send them out to everybody involved, photographers, venue, caterer, planner. And some people love them. Some people don't. Some people ignore them. And Dylan, I didn't share this with you, but this is the premise of this conversation. I went over to the maitre d' at one of my events this weekend. I'm just not going to say who for conversation's sake, but I said, hey, you got the timeline. We're all good. And he goes, bah, timelines. I've been doing this 27 years. They mean nothing. They never go as planned. And I kind of like chuckled. I'm like, yeah, but you know, it's a good starting point. And he's like, yeah, we know what we're doing. So on this episode 134, let's talk timelines.
Yeah. So I personally love timelines. I mean, you and I have, when we first got together, one of the strengths that I told you that I have and what I bring to the table for Explosive is I run a really tight timeline. And what that means to me is making sure that everyone executes that vision that we spend so long going over in the right order, where then the family involved, the guests involved have a natural feel to it. Whereas if you leave it to a guessing game where it's like, oh, maybe we'll do this or maybe we'll do that, you run the risk of it being very, very rocky. And unless you have an experienced entertainment team who can kind of just go with the flow and make it work, it leaves you up to chance. So for me, I love timelines. I love executing them well, and I run a really tight one. So, and then that, you know, obviously then scales depending on what type of activities are involved, what type of formalities are involved, the size of the venue, what type of meal is being served. A lot of timelines are driven out of the kitchen. So, that collaboration is really, really important for me. So I love them.
I'm going to say, I think a timeline is a great checklist. And a great organized checklist, because it's all the things that you have to do. I could tell you there were, in my early career, days that we forgot things because it wasn't on a timeline. Like, you get to the last hour of a party. I'll never forget a wedding. Pretty rare that we make mistakes, but I'll never forget a wedding that was going so incredibly well. And about 30 minutes left of the party, the bride comes over and says, "You never showed my montage." I was like, "Oh my God, it got lost in the sauce because we were having so much fun and they never really stopped for a dinner. This wedding was just so epic that we just never stopped to show a montage." So had I had a timeline, I would have had a checklist and I could have like, oop, time to show the montage. So I do give a lot of credit to timelines.
Yeah. And I think that the terminology timeline is a lot more aggressive than what we use internally, which is run of show. We use the terminology of run of show because it gives you a little bit of flexibility in it. Timelines are very rigid, where run of shows are a lot better use of that description, I think. So it's definitely a good checklist. It also shows you more or less the order in which the success will happen. But if it doesn't happen, at least you have the idea of what should be happening in what part. You know, there are some people that I know that run timelines to the minute. There's not a single high-end event planner that I know that doesn't create a timeline of sorts, but the collaboration among all of your vendors is going to drive that timeline success. So leaving a little bit of extra fluff in there is really important when it comes to timelines.
I you just hit the nail on the head. I part of what I love about these podcasts for those that are watching is that, you know, this isn't scripted. This is not a scripted conversation. I didn't know you.
Oh, I think they can tell.
Yeah, this is true. But you know, a lot of times we make a timeline or a run of show, and we're actually intentionally missing times. Like you'll have a start and end time of cocktail hour, start time for a grand entrance, but after that, you've got A, B, C, D that are going to happen next, in this order as they happen, like because you really can't predict how long a candle lighting is going to take because you don't know how long it's going to take for the guest of honor to read his or her palms. You don't know how long it's going to take for the guests to walk from their seats up and smile for the picture or pose, light the candles. You know, mom and dad's speech or toast can be quick or lengthy. And even when they say, "Hey, I'm going to speak pretty quickly," sometimes they get on a tear and, you know, they're 10 minutes in. You just don't know. So I think you hit the nail on the head. Run of show, way more important than timeline.
So what drives a timeline, I think I said it earlier, what drives a timeline is your food times. So I think understanding your food service is going to be very, very important and critical for starting the process of building a timeline or a run of show. You know, if you have multiple plated courses, or you have a bunch of action stations, or you have a buffet for one part of your guest count and then a plated three-course meal for another, that affects the run of show, which then could affect how the activities are centered. So for that reason, the best place to start is in your kitchen. Additionally, like for our sake, Mike, I know how certain kitchens run at venues that we're at a lot. So I can build timelines on their behalf because we work so well together.
But you know? Can I interject and just say,
yeah,
what you're saying makes sense for a venue that knows bar bat mitzvahs. But I would not let a wedding venue dictate the timeline of a mitzvah if they don't have that experience. We should ask the questions, how long do you need to get your meal orders, or how much time do you want between first course and second course? But you know, too often venues are trying to rush out the dessert and it derails the end of the party.
So that's a good point. That's a good point. So let me rephrase then. It is driven by the kitchen, but that doesn't mean the kitchen creates the timeline.
Sure.
Your activities are driven by the kitchen, but it doesn't mean it. Cause like, you know, the kitchen knows what it takes to get the food out hot. So as long as we know what that is, let's put that in the timeline at the appropriate time. Cause 9 times out of 10, your biggest dollar investment is going to be in your food service. And for that reason, we should really make sure that food gets out hot and proper. So when I say it's driven by the kitchen, it means that we really want to make sure that it's right, but it doesn't mean that the kitchen does the timeline for you. In fact, we often urge against that because most venues who do bar bat mitzvahs get it and know that the entertainment will help you get to that success point better than anyone else. They have the microphone, they have the charisma, and they have the control over the event, where a lot of wedding venues or venues who don't know bar and bat mitzvahs well enough will run it like they do it every other singular type of event, which is you're going to have your cocktail hour, then we are going to bang out your entire food service in 1 hour, and then you're going to have all of your free time at the end. And when it comes to kids, when it comes to high-end bar and bat mitzvahs, that's really just not the the right run of show.
So can I say, when I was running a venue, we actually intentionally didn't even think about food for the first hour of a party. In conversation's sake, if your cocktail hour was 6 to 7, 7 to 7.15 is like building the hype. 7.15 is grand entrance. You're going to dance for 10, 15, 20 minutes. Then you're going to sit. You're going to have blessing of bread, blessing of wine, probably a candle lighting and a hora. That brings you all the way down to 8 o'clock before your first course is served. So the room opens at 7, 8 o'clock, you're eating salads. That is absolutely okay because you just ate so much food during cocktail hour.
Yeah, you had all
the reason to rush the food.
Yep.
Yes, timeline important. So kitchen knows what time to get hot food out, cold food out, so that we all have something to flow. But I want to talk, Dylan, about like adaptations on the fly. And you made a judgment call this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
And it was all based on a feeling that you had. And actually, there were a couple things that we tweaked. And it was just based on feelings. And it was things that like naturally happened at the party, at the celebration, as you saw the energy level of the guests, and you said, I'm going to change this timeline right now because it's going to be better for the success of the event. And you want to talk about those items?
Yeah. So the first one, we'll set the stage for a second. I did not adjust mealtime. Let's just talk about that. I did not adjust mealtime. I knew what the kitchen needed to get the food out hot. So really they were on my side when I decided to make these changes. So the first one that I saw was, I looked at the run of show and I said, wait a minute, guys, we don't have enough of a natural flow to get a proper buildup for our hora. So I basically flip-flopped where the hora was and where the candle lighting was to allow for our guest of honor to feel more impacted by his entrance, and let it stand alone. So this is before the doors even opened to the main room. So that was one that I saw that the day of, I thought I liked it before, and then I liked it more when I saw the guests in cocktail hour, and I just had a feeling that this was going to work, and I think it did. I think that our guest of honor had a much more exciting center of attention, and that was because of that change. But the change that I think you're referring to happened hours later, where we were into dinner service, you know, well into dinner service, and what was supposed to be called for an adult dance set, instead, or actually, I think it was a kids dance set, like high energy, you know, Meek Mill, Lil Uzi type of rap that was on the kids' request list, the Bar Mitzvah Boys' request list, and it didn't fit the mold of this beautifully elegant afternoon celebration. So on the fly, I looked over at you, Mike, and we had this amazing sax player, Glenn, who does such a good job with dinner music, and the guest count was so much more heavily slated for adults that we made the call and decided to have a more melodic, elegant, sax driven dinner set. And for maybe 15 or 20 minutes, Glenn played the saxophone over some of the most popular, you know, sax driven songs, you know, whether it be Careless Whisper, or I think he did Journey's Open Arms. I mean, he did a lot of really great standards. And what I saw in that moment was the breathiness of the room was just so much more open. I didn't want people like holding their ears during their dinner service because we were playing, you know, Nicki Minaj, and instead they were enjoying their conversation. And I think that charged our event differently.
I thought it was such a good call. Like, you know, after an event, I get in my car, I start driving home, and my mind starts to replay the night. And I said to myself, Dylan had the feels. Like at that moment, you were feeling something and you acted on it and you made it happen. And it was really magical. And let's also set the tone that we had a giant video wall, and there was a, you know, well created montage that was supposed to be shown, but more ambient. Like the intent was not everybody stop what you're doing, sit down and watch this montage. And sometimes that's what the party calls for. And we stop, we serve popcorn, and like, it's, you know, like a presentation. In this case, they didn't want the presentation of it. So it was more ambient while guests were dining. And I was describing this, the play on this to Jamie, and I said, you know, it was like an interactive montage moment, like live saxophonist playing, you know, you could watch the sax play, you could enjoy the music, you could watch the montage, you could have a conversation at your table. It was just such a cool thing going on. And now let's take this to the next piece of this conversation, Dylan. We were originally going to do an episode of this podcast, you know, discussing if a party should be 4 or 5 hours. This party that we're discussing happened to be 5 hours. I suspect this was for a 4-hour event. You would not have made that same call.
No, I would have tried to really push through to make sure everyone had their moment on the dance floor. And I don't think that I would have been able to utilize the saxophone in the way that we did. And I think that the party benefited from me knowing that I had a little bit of extra time to do that. You know, otherwise the alternative would have been, I would have pushed that kid's dance set through and the video wall would have been covered by kids' bodies on the dance stages. Cause we had a dance floor going.
Yes.
And I knew I had to make a change because both, I didn't want adults to feel like they couldn't enjoy their meal that was so properly prepared and they had to leave because the music was too loud or it was too engaging or too stimulating. So,
you know, I didn't know this.
Mike, I don't think you even know this. I don't think you even know this, but this family had dedicated an entire room in this venue that they called the quiet room.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know this? They dedicated an entire room called the quiet room. And I guess they knew that there was going to be guests that weren't going to be into the flashiness and the energy that comes with bar and bat mitzvah talent like us. And they knew that. No one used the quiet room because we made this change. And the maitre d', the banquet captain of this venue, came over to me and says, man, I really thought we were going to have that room packed. And instead, it's empty and people are all here. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it absolutely was.
And that's because of a time. That's because of a timeline run of show shift.
So now let's expand on this. If this were, well, it was a 5-hour party. And if a client who's watching this podcast is planning a 5-hour party, things need to be spaced accordingly. If they're spaced accordingly, the end of the party ends the way it should, with passion, energy, excitement. Sometimes you're a guest at a party and the end starts to dwindle. And that may often be because things were rushed in the beginning. You know, you have this run of show. You have, let's say, 8 bullet points of things that have to be hit. If all 8 of those things are done in the first half of the party, what's left the next half? Analyze who your guest count are. Are they dancers? Are they drinkers? Are they wild? Are they crazy? Think about yourselves, because you're leading. You're driving this car. You know, are you the life of the party, or are you more of the reserved, I want to sit at my table and have conversations? There's no right or wrong, but a 5-hour party, if you want it to end on a high note, needs to be spaced accordingly. And the comparison, I'll say, was my Saturday night party that, Dylan, I didn't look down at my watch once. I felt like the party had just begun. And I looked at my watch. I'm like, oh my God, there's an hour left. Like, how did the first 3 hours fly by? But that was a nonstop party that was paced bam, 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 with just dancing, just filling the whole flow.
We had something similar, Mike. We had something similar. And fortunately, I was working with a caterer who just knows their stuff, man. Classical caterers, and Evan. I was working with him this weekend and he looked at me. I looked at him. He says, yeah, we're going to get the food out around this time. Don't do anything until I give you the signal. Awesome. Here we go. I know that we were shooting for dinner around this time. And he gave me a little bit of feedback. I gave him a little bit of feedback. And what it ended up happening was we were able to fill a dance floor really, really well without the need to stop at 8 o'clock exactly, or 8 o'clock figuratively, but stop here exactly because food is coming out. He's like, just wait for my signal. I'll have the first 3 tables plated and then you'll let them know. And to be honest, Mike, I don't think I ever had to announce it because it was so natural. Yeah. I think that's what happens when a properly paced party is realized. And you started talking about that with a 4-hour party versus a 5-hour party. And I always look at it like this. If you have a 5-hour celebration, just by happenstance, you are adding at least 10 minutes to every single section of your celebration. You're adding 10 minutes to your opening dance set. You're adding 10 minutes to your candle lighting formality set. You're adding 10 minutes to your dinner service. You're adding 10 minutes to your, you know, ending. And that 10 minutes could extend. It could make the extension too much. That first dance set goes from 15 minutes to 25 minutes. That is a big deal. That's a big deal. People could be gassed or burnt out. And that could drive them to want to maybe leave early because they're burnt out. It's a long day for a lot of people, you know, whether it's they're waking up early for hair, makeup, and the service, or are they coming back down and they have a long drive home. So it's a long day. So the pacing of that is dictated by, we're looking at a 4-hour party, a 4.5-hour party, or a 5-hour party. By having a 5-hour celebration, you are automatically guaranteeing an extra 10 minutes on every single section.
So I'm going to challenge you a hair here. And I just met with another family earlier this morning, and they're doing an hour and 15 minute cocktail hour. And their reason is they love cocktail hours at parties. Why rush the cocktail hour is what they basically said. They happen to be doing a mitzvah celebrating at the Jersey Shore overlooking the beach. It's going to be beachfront. So why rush it? Enjoy that time. And that will now cut into the rest of the time, but that was by design intentionally.
Yeah.
I also think that two items that need to be explored is the day of the week and the time of the day of the party. Is your party on a Saturday where most people are off the next day, or is there your party on a Sunday? We had a party last night on Sunday that ended at 9 p.m. It's kind of a late end for a Sunday night party. Our party that we attended together ended at 12:30. I'm sorry, ended at 5:30 on a Sunday, which still gives people more than enough time to, you know, worry about getting home and doing their laundry and all the things that happen on Sunday afternoons. And daylight, I think, is a big item too. How bright, how day lit is the party? Does it feel like a party? Does it entice you to dance in a dark space? Or are you surrounded by broad daylight, which is perfectly fine, but is not as subliminally dance related?
And sometimes, I mean, look, if you know your guests and they're going to dance anywhere, they dance in the closet, they dance on the roof, they dance in the middle of a field, it doesn't matter daylight or not, then obviously that doesn't apply to you. But of course that drives the mentality, is will it feel like a nighttime experience? And Mike, if you recall, during our pre-shift meeting on the Sunday afternoon event that we were at together, I said, the timeline is built to approach this like a Saturday evening. So that's what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we did, up until the point where we had to make that call for the more slowed down melodic dinner service. And I think that served well for this specific event, where I might not have done that at a Saturday evening bar bat mitzvah.
Mm-hmm.
Jamie checked in. She's one of our coordinators. She creates a lot of these timelines, and you'll never find an event coordinator like Jamie who, you know, lives and dies on the timeline, where she'll reach over and like tap our shoulder and say like, it's time to do this. And having that type of mindset is so important, because sometimes we do get lost in the sauce. Like, as an entertainer, you're getting so excited about, you know, whatever it is that you're doing, that you almost lose sight of the time. You said you didn't look down at your watch. I mean, sometimes that happens. So having a run of show and then a coordinator or a team that knows that exists is a really, really, really good key to success.
So can we talk about curveballs for a second?
Sure.
I'm going to challenge you, as I'm presenting this one, to think about a curveball that happened at a party that probably had a timeline, and how you encountered it. And my story from Saturday is that we did not know that many of the kids had a presentation. A lot of times when kids do these, you know, presentations, they show up with big poster boards and knitted blankets and all these things. Nobody had anything. There was nothing. And somehow it slipped through the cracks that there were presentations. And Samaj gets on the microphone. All right, ladies and gentlemen, you know, before we get into the montage, mom and dad have a couple things they want to say. Well, all of a sudden, a whole group of girls runs over to Samaj like, wait, we have something we want to say too. We kind of like looked at each other like, okay, where's this coming from? And Samaj says, all right, girls, we're going to make this happen. We want it to happen quickly, because it was some of the closest friends to our bat mitzvah girls. So Of course we want her to hear her friends, you know, share some stories. But Dylan, no joke, I think 12 people ran over Samaj with their iPhones out in the notes section with pages of notes of things that they wanted to say. And we looked at each other like, how is this going to happen right now? And Samaj was masterful in the way that he like pushed them. All right, girls, you could do these, but do them quick, fast, 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 fast. And we blew through these 12 individual speeches from the friends. But I'm so glad we did. There was a little bit of me that was like, maybe we should wait till dessert. But I'm glad we didn't. It was such a meaningful moment. The Bat Mitzvah girl was sitting on stage. Her friends were sharing these stories. The parents were just steps away because they were about to give, you know, deliver their speech. And you could just see her smiling ear to ear, listening to these stories from her friends. And that was a curveball. We didn't expect it. It probably took about 10 minutes. That was never scripted into a 4-hour timeline. And we just knew, make it happen, do it well, make it fast. And then when they concluded, mom and dad delivered a heartfelt speech. And then we showed the montage. If we had waited to dessert, I think it would have possibly derailed the end of the party. Because once that montage was shown, we danced nonstop right to the very end through dessert.
Well, you know what? It charged your last dance set with sentiment. That's what it did. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's no better place other than cocktail hour for that. And what we don't want to do is lose sight of the reason why we're there. And if that made our Bat Mitzvah girl feel so special, then let's continue to do those things.
Yeah.
I love that.
Curveballs of your own.
I got a few. Okay. Some of them are very, very easy, which I'm going to blow through. How about our Hora this weekend? Do you remember?
No.
Well,
I was there, but I don't know what you're talking about.
Nine times out of 10, 99 out of 100 times. We do a very, very pre-planned 8-minute Hora. It gives you enough time to get, you know, everyone up in the chair, get great photos, circle a few times, and then we move into some dancing. That is properly planned in the timing of that first dance set. I noticed that we had a lot of Sephardic Jews at the event based on both the way that they did led their prayers and the way that they did the Hora in the moment of the Hora. Like watching them do the Hora, I knew that there was something different about the way that they were interacting with each other during this time. It wasn't, and I looked over at you and I said, I need you to play these two more songs that related to the Sephardic element of their Hora. That was,
I appreciate you giving me all of 9 seconds notice too, but we made it happen. Thank you.
But that's something that wasn't in our timeline. That's something that affected how long that first set was, but it was important that we did it. Another one that I got for you is when I had a family who I coordinated, and then purposefully they didn't tell me that they were doing a performance. They are a very theatrical family. They were doing a performance with all the cousins, all the aunts, for the Bat Mitzvah girl. And they didn't tell me because the Bat Mitzvah girl was so involved in all of the planning that they knew that if we had mentioned it in the portal or if we mentioned it in a meeting, she would know about it and they didn't want her to see it. So I had to figure out how we are going to pull off this performance in a meaningful way that everyone was still there, that recharged the event and served a good purpose. And we had to just make it happen. And funny enough, having the montage later in the evening allowed us to energize the room with it. Because it was like we watched the montage and then we did this performance because everyone's focal point was in the exact same spot. Everyone's looking in the exact same spot. So I think the common theme here is having a big moment like a montage or a speech or a father-daughter, mother-son dance in the last 90 minutes of your celebration gives you the flexibility to handle a curveball.
And it causes a hard reset, which we often need to just change the dynamic, change the feel, switch up, you know, musically what's going on and give people a moment to take a breath. You know, we often say, you know, these aren't 4-hour Zumba classes. That's just not a thing. Nobody does right. That. You know, even when you're working out, you know, you're going to work out in a aerobics class for 45 minutes and going to move on to weight training.
That's right.
You know, that's right. That is how it goes. So let's tie this whole thing back together. You know, timelines, love it or hate it. What do you think?
I love them. I'm going to continue to love them. I think it allows me a lot more face time with the family to understand and design a timeline that's going to work for them. I love it because it allows me to connect with the vendors and understand their goals of the event while then simultaneously having them meet the expectation of our family. I plan everything from group photos to when people sit down and what type of sets we're doing in them. But I also don't plan it to the minute. If I see an odd number in a run of show, like a 932, it's not for me. I don't need a 932 marker. I need, you know, big, hard numbers, 930, 945. You know, I need big, hard numbers. So I don't need to plan things to the minute, but I do plan the sections out. I love them. I think every high-end event has them. And I think that if you don't have them, talk to your most trusted mitzvah professional to make it happen.
I'm going to add a good piece of advice here. I think an initial timeline should be created way early in the planning phase. And that starts your run of show checklist process. And then the final timeline happens, you know, within the weeks leading up to the party. And I say that because it makes you think, do I need a 4-hour party or do I need a 5-hour party? Which is such a hot topic these days. And the trend is going back to 4-hour parties. It's really going back to 4-hour parties, but there's certainly times 5-hour makes sense, but don't guess. Put it on paper, write it out, and then really analyze and say, does this make sense? Mm-hmm. Does this make sense for my family? Does it make sense for everything else we have going on in this crazy weekend? Does it make sense for the time of the year, the day of the week? All of those things, if you could do that early in your planning phase, the rest can be buttoned up as it gets closer and leave opportunity for the professionals to make quick changes on the fly as needed. This is not the holy grail, but it's close. But we should be able to make changes.
Yep, I agree. Which then ties back to the ultimate theme of almost every one of our podcasts: hire professionals who you are willing to collaborate with and that you trust. So that's that, man. Episode 134 of Mastering Mitzvahs Timelines. It's an ongoing topic, and I'd love to continue this conversation with anyone. I'm happy to talk about 5-hour parties, 4-hour parties, and I know you would too. So on behalf of Explosive Entertainment, that's Mike. I'm Dylan. This was Mastering Mitzvahs. We'll check you later.